Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, our guest, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. We talked to him in Venice, where he was visiting the Phoenix House, a drug rehabilitation center. This is a live-in center where people come anywhere between 60 days and longer to try to get clean. Many of them are homeless. This is the kind of program that the governor hopes to replicate and expand if Proposition 1 passes. That's on the March ballot, bipartisan effort to try to get 11,000 mental health beds up and running, 27,000 outpatient beds, I should say, with a $6.3 billion bond. We sat down to talk about it. It's an exclusive conversation to get a deeper dive about how that would work, what that means. And while talking with him, we also brought up his recent debate with Governor Ron DeSantis, the California budget. We talked about the struggling Biden campaign and even some of his holiday favorites. Here is the extended interview with Governor Gavin Newsom.
Welcome to The Issue Is. With us right now is Governor Gavin Newsom.
Welcome
back to the show.
It's my first time on the show.
Yeah.
It's nice to be with you.
Welcome back. So this time we're at the Phoenix House.
Yeah,
this is a spot in Venice. They do rehab here for folks who are suffering from addiction.
Yeah.
And many of them are homeless.
Yeah.
And we've come here to talk about Proposition 1.
Yeah.
For people that haven't read it yet, yeah. What is Proposition 1?
It's to address the original sin in California, and that's the deinstitutionalization, the shutting down of our mental health facilities in the state of California. Going back to 1967, accelerated in the 70s, in the 80s, a lack not only of state focus and funding, but also federal funding. We promoted and promised moving away from locked facilities, community-based facilities like this, but we never fulfilled that promise. We never fulfilled that vision. This is about finally fulfilling that vision. It's about not promoting a promise, but delivering on what was promoted a half century ago and addressing the crisis of our time, the issues around mental health, homelessness, and the related issues around crime, quality of life.
Okay, so there's two parts to this, right? There's a $6.3 billion bond.
Yep.
And what does that do?
11,000 units. I mean, the biggest issue is we need more units. We need more housing of all types. Group homes, boarding care homes, scattered site homes, rehab, not just acquire, not just new construction. We also need reforms on zoning, meaning placing these facilities. And we need to reform the process, the time it takes, because the costs are astronomical and unacceptable. So they have more transparency, more accountability measures, minimum of 12,000 new units, beds and treatment slots. In addition to that, 27,000 outpatient slots. So this is the most significant. There's never been a state in U.S. history investing more to target the issue of our time, behavioral health, mental health, target chronic homeless individuals, but also target the needs and desires of everybody watching that's struggling, maybe themselves, with issues of mental health and emotional distress and those they love. And so this is one of the great opportunities, the most exciting thing I've ever been part of. No BS.
More than anything you've ever been a part of?
Why is
that?
Because this touches more people in more ways on more days. This has the promise of promoting the reforms and the changes the state is desperate for. People have had it. I've had it. I know what everyone's thinking. Here we go again. Talking about homelessness, talking about housing, mental health, and we failed to deliver. This is the missing piece. And we've been putting this together for a few years. We've been promoting this bipartisan support in Sacramento, rare, and it's going to be on the ballot in March.
And so there's the bond, and then there's also sort of changes in the way that funding is done,
yes,
right, so that it makes it easier to do something like that and to create some beds like this.
Yeah, I mean,
as
you
well.
See a unit like this, and you read the headlines in the LA Times, and it's $800,000 a unit, and you're a taxpayer. You're going, are you kidding? It took 6 years to develop that? That may not be fair, may be fair. The bottom line is we don't have time. We need to get these sites up, and we need to do it in a more cost-efficient way. So 11,000 units just in that bond, $6.38 billion. But here's also the other exciting component part. We're going to reform the Mental Health Service Act. What is it? In 2004, the voters passed a millionaire's tax, Prop 63. And it was for mental health. But let's be candid. Look at the conditions we're experiencing. It needs to be reformed. It didn't even include housing. Back in 2004. It didn't even include substance abuse. So we're reforming it, and we're targeting the money, more accountability to address chronic homelessness, ongoing money, so there's no excuses about the investments at the local level, with accountability and requirements that there's collective vision and planning that's never been the case with state-funded programs in the past. No tax increase, just a reform of the existing tax investment.
Can we solve homelessness without this?
I think the scale and scope, we've gotten 68,000 people off the streets. And that's been politifact because no one believes it. I mean, people say, they roll their eyes because they don't see it. So the scale and scope, we can solve homelessness for an individual, but the scale of the challenge in the state and those that are struggling that end up on the streets every single day to keep up and get ahead, we need something at this scale. And this is all about scale and speed. Scale, speed, and accountability at all levels.
Well, and that speed problem is an issue because no doubt there are people that are taken off the streets, but then there's new people that show up and replace them, and oftentimes more. I mean, especially in LA County, we've spent more money on homelessness and the problem keeps getting worse.
You got it.
So what do you say to people that don't trust that the government can do this right?
Because we need to do, we have to scale the solutions and we have to do it in a more cost efficient manner. And we need to move away from the finger point and we need to align the strategies with more intention and focus. That's exactly what this does. This shifts the funding stream, enforces a focus, and shifts it away from the silos of cities and counties and regions and the state and federal government and focuses it on the most acute chronic problem. And here's the thing, it also focuses on prevention to address precisely the issue you talk about by making eligible the Mental Health Service Act money. Again, no new taxes, not a penny more in taxes on that reform. The money goes to help pay rent, prevention strategies, and addressing the issues, particularly in the beginning of an issue. And I think this is an important point. This is all about treating brain health early before we punish it later. We call this treatment not tense for a reason, because the old binary, when it comes to the issue of behavioral health, substance abuse, people self-medicating with drug or alcohol addictions that are out in the streets and sidewalks, is encampments or confinement. Literally, quite literally, that was the old binary. You're either out on the streets or you're in the county jail. $100,000 here, and of course, complete failure and abject frustration here. This is about addressing that and addressing that gap in a very strategic way with proven strategies. We're not making this up. We know what works. That's why we're in a program that's working.
The new PPIC poll this week showed pretty good news on this front. About two-thirds of Californians like this idea.
That's great.
But you have a way to go on that. But there are opponents, and what some of the opponents say is they're concerned that this is going to be forced treatment for folks, reminder of the 60s and other things like that. What do you say to those opponents?
Well, I say, look at the status quo. It's unacceptable. Everybody's talking about the way the world should be, but they don't have the actual strategies and tools to actually address these conditions. We actually have come up with proven strategies to address the conditions. And yes, we have to do things differently. Yes, when someone's out there having, on this schizophrenia spectrum, is out there screaming and yelling in the middle of the streets, pulling their pants down, defecating, and we have no tools to help that person, and the only thing we have is compassion by watching them die and suffer on the streets in the name of compassion, we want, through Care Court, a separate initiative, to have the resources and a resourceful mindset to, have court-ordered treatment, due process, and a process that doesn't replicate the 60s and 70s, but addresses what the crisis is today. And I just, with respect, say this to those that are opposed to more aggressive efforts to get people into treatment. You've had 30 to 40 years to prove yourself. Look at the streets, complete failure.
So why is it going to be different this time?
Because we're requiring different levels of accountability, transparency. We're going at scale and speed. I think the challenges in the past, look, California is the size of 21 state populations combined. Even when you make a $1 billion investment, it's a drop in the overall bucket. And so it's scale. So we did an analysis, RAND actually did an independent analysis. What would California need? Big meta question to address the behavioral health crisis, to address the chronic issues out on the streets and sidewalks for those that are struggling the most with mental health. And they estimate about 6,000 units. The question then was to break down what type of units, where would they be located? How do you locate them? How do you fund them? How do you do it cost efficient way? And what's the time value of that in terms of just making sure they're done in our lifetimes, because we don't have time to wait. And we broke that down and we said we need to do a little better than that, 11,000 units. And we have that bond component and we're going to reform an existing system without spending more money. You combine those two things with all the other work the state's doing, with a different level of focus and energy, this is a very, very different paradigm.
We're talking with Governor Gavin Newsom. A couple other topics real quick. We haven't seen you since you debated Governor Ron DeSantis. Before that, we sort of went viral when you talked to us about how you were baiting him into that debate.
And you're baiting him with the debate offer?
Of course. I mean, why is he debating a guy who's not even running for president when he's running for president?
What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was surreal. I mean, it was legitimately 2-on-1. So that was an experience. It was not advertised as that, but it certainly was produced accordingly. It was surreal because I still am sort of perplexed why a presidential candidate would debate a governor from another state. I still don't know why, but it was a great experience, just the experience itself. It was an opportunity to expose and express a contrast to the policies of not just Ron DeSantis, but the Republican Party. And you're seeing that playing out. You're seeing it in Texas right now on the issues of abortion. And the attorney general in Texas wanted to criminalize doctors, just like Ron DeSantis wants to criminalize not just doctors, but women. The issues around book bans and this cultural purge and using education as a weapon for their cultural expression. And so all of that was on display on a network that never hears any of that. It's a network. It's just surround sound anger machine, where voices like ours are left out. And so getting in there, I thought, was important. And I think more Democrats need to do that.
When Ron DeSantis pulls out of his jacket a map of poop in San Francisco, what goes through your mind?
He's no Ronald Reagan. I mean, that's where the Republican Party is today. I mean, here's a guy running for president of the United States, and, you know, wow, pulls out a poop map. By the way, rules of the debate were pretty clear that there was none of those games, so, I mean, rules don't apply to them over there. It's a surreal thing. And it shows the level of just I don't want to relitigate it except to say I was embarrassed for him. Let's just say that.
And you had never met him before.
No.
Was it like behind the scenes?
He was even stiffer during the breaks and before and after than he was even on screen. Look, I'm not a fan of his values, his policies, his demeaning of the LGBTQ community, his demeaning of women, his demeaning of the black community. I mean, this is a guy who believes slavery. I mean, he doubled down. Tim Scott told him to apologize, and he doubled down, saying slavery was somehow a quote-unquote workforce development program or provided professional skill development. I mean, he got rid of AP African American Studies. What's CRT and DEI all about? I mean, you know, this anti-woke thing is really about him saying he's anti-black. I don't like this guy in terms of those values.
You think he's anti-black?
No, I'm just saying those policies are.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, you don't promote slavery somehow as a workforce development program. You don't reject AP African American Studies. You don't have a publisher because of your anti-woke policies that actually wrote out Rosa Parks' race until people like myself and others expressed such outrage because they wanted to comply with the law. Unless you've got an agenda that I think is as different, as I said, as daylight and darkness between the agenda of a state like ours that believes in pluralism and celebrates our diversity. I don't like the weaponization of grievance. I don't like the demeaning of vulnerable communities, women and minorities. And I don't like what he's done on a lot of these policies. A
couple of the quick current events. We saw this week images of you seeing some of the materials that are headed to Gaza and Israel.
Yeah.
For California to try to help in both situations.
Yeah.
There also was a pretty unfortunate situation. You're supposed to light the Capitol Christmas tree, and it had to be canceled because of protests. Do it virtually instead. What does that say about the state of where we're at right now?
That was hard. I mean, we always look forward to that. The kids look forward to that. We have a lot of children that show up at that. And something people may not know about our Christmas tree lighting, it's people with developmental disabilities. So vulnerable communities, and we just couldn't risk what was being promoted as a die-in or sit-in or some protest to shut down Christmas. So that was unfortunate. And it is the nature of the moment we're living in. And look, I experienced it firsthand visiting Israel and seeing the images, the atrocities of Hamas firsthand, seeing quite literally a video of someone being decapitated, not after they were decapitated, watching the decapitation in real time. At the same time, I'm a parent. And I watch children suffering and dying in Gaza. Breaks my heart. Innocent people. So the whole thing is devastating and difficult. The anti-Semitism, this rank, open anti-Semitism, is so vile and unacceptable at the same time. So it's a very difficult moment in our history. I'll be seeing the president shortly. I'm sure we'll have long conversation about that, either in private or during our subsequent meeting. But I'm just praying that we get this thing behind us and Hamas is eliminated, both for Israel, but also the Palestinian people themselves.
Do you think it's time for a ceasefire?
I'm going to leave that. I wish it was that simple.
Yeah.
I want this war to end. I want innocent lives not to be lost. I want Hamas eliminated. I want the hostages home. I want two-state solution, two secure states. I want the Palestinian people to live free. But Hamas must be eliminated.
You're speaking with the president here in Los Angeles. You spent a lot of time with him. You've been a surrogate for the Biden campaign. What more do you think needs to be done to get the message out? Because clearly there is a disconnect, especially in some swing states.
I'm going to keep doing it. I mean, that was a big part of the DeSantis debate, was making a case for Biden's record. And I didn't make that sheepishly. I made that, I hope, forcefully on a network that's never heard any of that. It's completely unaware of 14 million jobs is 10 times more than the last three Republican presidents combined. You saw unemployment drop to 3.7% today. Lowest black unemployment, lowest unemployment for women in 70 years, 5.2% GDP growth. I know that's in the aggregate, and none of us live in the aggregate. And I know how painful inflation has been, though we're seeing it finally tamed down to 3.2% wages now, outperforming even the stubborn inflation. Interest rates will coming down soon. That said, I'm proud of his record. We need to make the case, mind that gap, promote the successes of the administration, and then promote the contrast, which is the answer to your question. That's the pivot in this campaign, and that will come into crystal clear focus when, not if, Trump is the nominee in a matter now of weeks, within the next 2 months or so.
Yeah. Here in California, the big story for you of the next year is going to be the budget, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at what kind of budget deficit are we looking at, and what
it's
kind of
smaller
cuts?
Than it's been advertised, but it's I've been advertising this. I mean, anyone has been paying attention to me, all my vetoes. This is we've known this, and we've known this since we had those crazy surpluses. Remember, last 2 out of 3 years, we had $177.7 billion surplus. That's why we gave $18.5 billion, largest tax rebate in U.S. history. We just finished sending close to $20 billion back to the taxpayers because of this wash of what happened, pandemic. Made no sense. The surplus made no sense. The deficits made no sense last year. And then the biggest challenge was the delay in tax receipts. And we made that point to the IRS. We were actually arguing against some of those subsequent extensions because we went into the budget last year blind. And I made that point to legislature and others. And that's why so many of the vetoes. And that's why we prepared for this. And you'll see the architecture around this in January.
Okay, you say it's not as big as we advertise. What is it then?
Well, I'll tell you in January.
Okay. We're going to...
I just think this is really important. Highest reserves in history, more one-time spending intentionally than any other budgets we've ever done, so we can claw that back a little bit, the one time, or extend it out a year or two. So difficult choices, but nothing like the old days, because we never had the reserves in the last few recessions that we have now, and we didn't have the financial management that we do now. It's a big number, but it's a very different number in the context of how we've been managing the budgets the last 10 years. We'll get through this, and for me, it's not a surprise, and it explains a lot of the reasons why I vetoed $22 billion of new spending last year.
Well, we wrap things up with the governor of California. It is the holiday season, so we're going to do a rapid-fire personal issues holiday style, okay, to learn your holiday favorites.
All right.
First thing that comes to mind, all-time favorite holiday movie.
Oh, I love Actually.
Okay.
I know. I didn't
you
expect
you with the signs.
You did not
you in the
expect
signs.
That.
Romantic here.
I know a little bit. I love that movie.
Favorite holiday song?
Favorite holiday song?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on. I don't know. You know my favorite? Joni Mitchell song. Which one? I can't remember. But Joni Mitchell. The
okay.
great. The great.
Anything she
the
sings.
The great yeah. Joni Mitchell.
Californian. And finally, do you know, this is a time of reflection.
For those I just offended,
yeah.
I love everyone's unique expression. I'm for what you're for.
A holiday message, or this is a moment of reflection. And as you wrap up the year and think about things ahead, you have a message you're thinking about.
This too shall pass. I mean, just this fundamental notion, this too shall pass. You know, we are remarkably resilient, much more resilient than we think we are in life. Personally, our state, our nation, the world we're living in, you know, we've experienced interesting and challenging and vexing times before, some exponentially more challenging than what we're experiencing now. Our grandparents, as an example, and what they worked themselves through. So I have just great confidence in the future of the state and our country. And it just, again, I just pray that we can just focus a little less on our differences and focus on the things that unite us and bind us together. And I'll tell you one thing back to this issue that should be the ultimate unity agenda. It's the issue of mental health.
Yeah. Governor Gavin Newsom, thank you for a great year of interviews. Really appreciate it. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Good to be with you.
Our thanks to Governor Newsom and our thanks to you for listening. Next week, Matt Friend, the impressionist, will have some fun talking about Governor Newsom and Ron DeSantis and a whole lot more. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Leave us a nice review if you can. Reach out to me in social media. Would love to hear from you and look forward to being with you next week for more of The Issue Is.